From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis.
And I'm Peter Sagal. The U.S. no longer manufactures much, and we've had to be satisfied with a tie in our last few wars. But we still lead the world in unjustified panics. We'll ask why we're all sweeping out our old Y2K bunkers. Plus, actor Jeff Goldblum talks about growing up in Pittsburgh and where he got that laugh. Plus, Bill Curtis gives you all fair warning before this week's show.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have an extremely peculiar situation right now.
We'll ask what really went terribly wrong right after this hour's news.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm simply gorgeous anchorman, Bill Curtis. And here's your host at the Benedum Center for the Performing Arts in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Peter Sagal.
Thank you all. Thank you. It is, in fact, great. It is great to be back in Pittsburgh, PA, which many people still think of as a rust belt post-industrial wasteland, but is actually a gorgeous metropolis bathed by rivers, surrounded by hills, and populated by the most beautiful people on the planet. They also have a very generous tourist bureau. Thanks, guys. We'll be talking to Pittsburgh's native son, actor Jeff Goldblum, about this paradise on Earth. But first, it's your turn. Give us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi. How are you doing, Peter?
I'm fine. Who's this?
This is Sam from Andover, Massachusetts.
Andover? And what do you do there?
I'm a student at the University of Massachusetts in Lowell.
Oh, and what are you studying?
Chemistry.
I see.
Yeah.
And what do you want to do with that degree?
Well, I wanted to work in industry, but as
there is no more.
Well, we still have one, but it's really repetitive work, so I've decided to become a teacher.
Oh, that's excellent. We need more teachers.
Good for you.
I've watched enough TV to know that that's code for he's going to make meth.
Really? Much better. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. Samuel, first up, it's the humorist who'll be hosting Storytellers on a Mission with Roy Blunt Jr. at the Flynn Theater in Burlington, Vermont on November 1st. I mean, it's Tom Baudet.
Hello, Sam.
How's it going, Tom?
Next up, it's a style columnist for the Washington Post, Roxanne Roberts.
Hello, hello.
And finally, a contributor to CBS Sunday Morning, the inimitable Faith Saley is here.
Hi, Sam.
So, Sam, you'll start us off with Who's Bill This Time. Bo Curtis, of course, is going to recreate for you dramatically three quotations from the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain two of them. Do that. I bet you anticipated this, and you will win the voice of scorekeeper emeritus Carl Castle on your voicemail. You ready to go?
I am very ready.
All right. Here is your first quote.
Oops.
That is the Calgary Sun, being kind of Canadian, as they talk about U.S. efforts to deal with what crisis?
The Ebola crisis.
The Ebola crisis! America is in the midst of an irrational panic attack about the Ebola virus. It's 24/7 on cable news. Even though 2 times more people in this country have been married to Larry King than have come down with Ebola. Maybe we should quarantine him if you're concerned about public safety. Ebola is extremely hard to get, as we all know, but thankfully our medical personnel are making it a lot easier. The Dallas hospital, which handled the first domestic case, managed to expose dozens of people to the disease, including 2 nurses who then contracted it. Hopefully, this should end the hospital's practice of ending each nursing shift by French kissing the patients.
Yeah, I might have my incompetent government agencies mixed up, but it seems like just a matter of time before Ebola jumps the White House fence.
That's true. everybody was saying to President Obama, you have to take care of this. You have to show leadership. So President Obama canceled a trip he was going to go on to hold meetings to discuss the crisis. Well, of course, that's just an excuse. He doesn't want to go to the airport either. Somebody might have Ebola.
You know who I'm really worried about is Wolf Blitzer. Yeah, that guy hasn't taken a breath in 2 weeks.
Really?
Yeah.
He's learned circular breathing. He can inhale through the nose while spreading panic with the mouth. I just want to say that this whole thing, this whole Ebola crisis is a validation for those of us who spend all our time avoiding all human contact so we can stare at our phones. There. We're going to be the last one. We're all going to look up at our phones and everybody else is going to be dead. And we're going to like, oh. Better tweet that to the survivors. All right. Very good, Sam. Here is your next quote.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have an extremely peculiar situation right now.
That was a moderator at the gubernatorial debate in Florida Wednesday night. One of the candidates, Governor Rick Scott, refused to take the stage because his opponent in the debate was using what?
I have no idea.
Really? You didn't hear about this?
No, I didn't hear about
it. His opponent, who's former Governor Crist, two governors were debating, really wanted, if you will, to be cool during the debate.
It's that humidity, Sam.
He was using a fan?
A fan, yes! It's Fangate. Fangazi. The teapot fan scandal. I don't know. So this is what happens. You all know the scene. It's when a live debate starts on TV, and the lights come up, and there's the stage, and there's the bunting, and there's the podium. And there's one candidate with his silver hair waiting to go, and there's nobody else. Because the sitting governor of Florida, Rick Scott, refused to come on stage because his team asserted that Governor Crist, his opponent, former Governor Crist, had a little fan in his podium, and those were illegal under the agreed-upon debate rules. And nobody could believe this. It was a political debate in 2014 that was actually interesting to watch. And Governor Scott finally agreed to come on stage. They allowed him to wear a tank top and shorts so he would also be cool. He looked good. Yeah. Apparently, the rule in question that caused the problem, there's no electronics allowed in the debate. This is obvious because you don't want, you know, people getting information through an earpiece or maybe a phone. But a fan? Is a fan a problem in this regard? I guess you can't be too careful. What if one of the questions was, Mr. Crist, what sound does the wind make?
Well, it just goes to show it's not the heat, it's the stupidity.
Maybe Charlie Crist, he's in his 50s, maybe he's just going through the change.
Here, Sam, is your last quote.
Will this mean the death of cable? Spoiler alert, yes.
That was Decider website talking about a company's decision to allow non-cable subscribers to use their streaming service at long last. Who is it?
HBO.
It is HBO. Very good. The announcement Wednesday that HBO would offer its programming online to anyone who paid was like this big vulture circling in the sky above cable TV. It means you won't need cable to watch HBO anymore, or CBS News, which offered the same thing. It also means you can stop sponging off your parents' password and start supporting yourself, you freeloaders.
Is this going to work like Netflix now?
Yeah, it is. Work just like that. Okay. And it's a good deal for anybody who's paying $100 a month for cable just to get HBO, because they're going to offer their online service for about $5 a month, which works out to just one penny per gratuitous nude scene in a season of Game of Thrones. Cable, though, is not taking this lying down. Cable TV says it's going to make a comeback sometime in a two-hour window between 2014 and 2018. Can't be more specific at this time, and no, it can't call you first. Bill, how did Sam do on our quiz?
Chemistry or not, Sam got them all right.
Well done, Sam. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us, and good luck in the chemistry degree.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Bye-bye, Sam. We want to remind everybody they can join us most weeks back in Chicago at the Chase Bank Auditorium. For tickets and more information, go to WBEZ.org, where you can find a link at our website, which is waitwait.npr.org. Right now, though, panel, it is time for you to answer some questions about the week's news. Faith, in the interest of runner safety, the Baltimore Marathon has banned spectators from doing what at this weekend's race?
Cheering runners on by flashing them. Close?
First of all, speaking as somebody who has run a few marathons,
that would be
awesome. But no, they want to keep runners from sprinting too early.
They don't want the runners sprinting too soon, so they don't want them to play music that's really inspiring.
No,
they don't want them to cheer and clap and say, go, go, go.
They don't want them to say something specific.
Oh, like tell them how far along they are
specifically,
on the route. Like,
you encourage them. You are allowed to say this only, and this is true, in the last 300 feet.
You're
of
almost
the 20.
There.
Exactly. At the Baltimore Marathon this weekend, spectators are asked not to yell or say, "You're almost there," unless the runners are almost there. At all the big marathons, and I've experienced this, thousands of spectators line the streets supporting the runners, and we love this, they support the runners by shouting obvious lies at them. They yell things like, "Almost there," when you've got 10 miles to go. They yell, "Looking good." Because the truth, dear God, seek medical attention now, is not encouraging.
You know, I think it goes against what we're so if you're in a good relationship, you're so used to saying to your partner, "Hey, looking good, you're almost there," that you don't want to stop saying that to encourage people.
Yes,
it just comes naturally. To me.
Is that why, Faith, you're often by the side of Marathon shouting, "A little more to the left"?
Almost there. We're almost there. How wonderful, wonderful our love will be.
So let's say you run your own business. That means you're busy all day, imagining what you're going to do with the money when you sell out for billions of dollars. Are you going to buy a basketball court to put on your yacht or a yacht to put on your basketball court? You don't have time to go to the post office. That's why we want to let you know about Stamps.com. It lets you buy and print real U.S. postage right from your desk. You use your own computer and printer. It's so easy. You can check out Stamps.com for a no-risk trial and even an offer of some free postage. Okay, here's what you do. You go to Stamps.com, you go to the microphone at the top of the page, and you enter WAIT, W-A-I-T. That way, they know we sent you, you get your free offer, and you get back to dreaming about your basket yacht.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis, and we're playing this week with Faith Seeley, Tom Beaudet, and Roxanne Roberts. Here again is your host at the Benedum Center in Pittsburgh, Peter Sagal.
Thank you. Thank you all. Right now it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hello, this is Margaret Rick.
Hey, Margaret, where are you calling from?
Fairfield, Connecticut.
Oh, I've been in the fair fields of Connecticut as well. What do you do there?
I sell champagne.
Ooh! Are you one of those people who get upset when other people refer to champagne, stuff that doesn't come from champagne?
Sadly, I am that person.
I see. Margaret, welcome to the show. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Bill, what is Margaret's topic?
You don't get what you don't ask for.
It takes a lot of guts and courage to go after something you really want. Or maybe you're just stupid. Either way, we're on your side. This week, we read a story about someone taking the initiative and going for it. Guess the real story, and you will win Carl Castle's voice on your voicemail. First up, let's hear from Roxanne Roberts.
PTA President Beth Ann Schulte was determined that her 7-year-old daughter Olivia would raise the most money in her classroom's annual wrapping paper fundraiser. So determined that when she saw the Frozen-themed Christmas paper, she called the distributor and scooped up all 10,000 rolls for $50,000. The delighted Schulte immediately listed her stash for sale at cost on Craigslist and eBay, causing a flood of Princess Elsa fans to her door. But then her neighbors called the police, and the city of Dallas charged her with running the illegal business out of her home, reports the Dallas Morning News. Undaunted, Schulte contended that all the wrapping paper was for friends and personal use, and she covered her garage door, her mailbox, her kitchen, her bath, and the dog crate with it to prove it. A Dallas County judge ruled last week that Schulte is engaging in, quote, a temporary charitable endeavor, unquote, and not profiting, so she's in the clear. Oh, and he ordered 5 rolls for his granddaughter.
A woman making sure that her kid wins the wrapping paper selling contest, buys it all. Your next story of a squeaky wheel getting that grease comes from Faith Saley.
Jordan Abreu really loves his girlfriend Charlotte. Charlotte really loves her dog Devil. So Jordan decided to use her dog in his foolproof plan to get Charlotte to marry him. Except, it turns out, the devil's in the details. Jordan and Charlotte met as undergrads at Duke University. Therefore, obviously, the most romantic proposal Jordan could imagine was to kidnap her dog and send Charlotte anonymous messages telling her that if she wanted to see her little dog alive, she had to show up on the field at the Duke Blue Devils football game at halftime. I thought it would be really funny because she hates sports, Jordan said. And also really cool to cut out individual letters and glue them into a retro ransom note. He made sure that stadium officials met the distraught Charlotte to escort her onto the field where the Jumbotron could catch all the action. When Charlotte saw Jordan at midfield on bended knee holding her beloved Shih Tzu, she burst into tears. When she noticed that Jordan had thoughtfully dyed her devil dog blue and strung a diamond ring around his collar, her heart started pounding. Like really pounding. Like with the kind of hyperventilation that comes from a panic attack. She grabbed her dog, kicked Jordan and his blue devils, and ran off the field.
A man decides that he will propose to his girlfriend via Jumbotron no matter what. And your last story of somebody taking that bull by those horns comes from Tom Baudette.
St. Paul, Minnesota city worker Megan Campbell had a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. First, while driving a supply van back from a city storage building, she hit a parked car, causing serious damage. Darn it. Then she discovered that her personal vehicle, a 13-year-old Nissan Pathfinder, had just been hit by a city supply van driven by none other than herself. Double darn it. She couldn't believe her bad luck, but in a burst of that old Minnesotan can-do spirit, she decided to take the lemons life had handed her and squirt them in everybody's eyes. Because I was working for the city and driving a city vehicle, she wrote in her claim for damages, I feel the city is responsible for the damage done to my car. With winter approaching, Twin Cities snowplow drivers with aging personal vehicles are watching the outcome of the claim closely and parking on the street.
All right. One of these three people was our hero this week for simply not taking no for an answer. Was it from Roxanne Roberts, a woman who was so determined that her child would win the wrapping paper selling contest that she bought it all herself and then wrapped everything with it? From Faith Saley, a guy who needed to get his girlfriend on the field so he could propose to her via Diamond Vision, even though she hated sports? Or from Tom Baudette, a city worker who smashed her own car and then sued the city because a city worker had smashed her car?
Well, I think I may know a couple of people who might actually do the wrapping paper thing.
Yeah.
I actually read about the woman suing the city for hitting her own car. I'm going with Tom Burdette.
You're
going
to go with Tom Burdette. So you actually are claiming knowledge here.
I'm afraid so.
All right.
That's like cheating on this
show. It really is.
It screws up the game, Margaret.
You've chosen Tom's story. Well, to bring you the correct answer, we spoke to someone familiar with it.
A woman was driving a rented city van. She turned a corner and ran head-on into her own vehicle and has now filed a claim against the city for the damages caused to her vehicle.
That was Nelson Ireson, senior editor for Motor Authority, talking about the remarkable woman who, working for the city of St. Paul, smashed a city car into her own car, then sued the city because some negligent city worker smashed her car. She will go far in life, pretty much just down the block till she hits another car.
Right.
So you got it right. You earned a point for Tom simply by telling the truth. It's so simple for him. And you have won our prize. Carol Castle recorded the greeting on your voicemail. So well done. Congratulations.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you, Margaret.
Bye-bye.
And now the game where we like to ask people about where they came from and how they ended up here. It's called Not My Job. Actor Jeff Goldblum got his start as a performer playing piano in the clubs here in Pittsburgh, where he grew up, and eventually ended up being one of the most celebrated character actors in Hollywood. He joins us now. Jeff Goldblum, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you so much.
So is it true, Jeff, that what we heard, that you first started performing as a piano player, which I know you still are, as a teenager here in Pittsburgh, is that right?
Yeah, I did. I had a couple of jobs there. My parents gave us piano lessons, and then somehow around 15, even though I knew I wanted to be an actor, I had this idea, and I thought I'd be sneaky or something. I don't know why I had to do it. I got the Yellow Pages and sequestered myself in some little place in the house and started to call a list of cocktail lounges and say, hey, I hear you need a piano player there. I thought I'd pull some kind of scam. Most people would say, no, we don't even have a piano. Some people would say, yeah, we got a piano, come down. Well, so I got a couple of jobs that way. How about that?
Really?
Yeah.
And have you used that technique later in life? Did you call up Steven Spielberg and say, hey, I think you're looking for an eccentric mathematician?
Yeah, no. Not really. No. I've gone straight my approach now.
So you went off to New York to be an actor at the age of 17, and you were in theater for a long time, and then you broke into movies playing, and our understanding is your first credited role in movies was in the movie Death Wish as Freak Number One.
Freak Number One, correct. Yeah.
So if I remember correctly, Death Wish is the movie where Charles Bronson, his family is attacked and horribly hurt, and then he goes on a spree of vengeance. And you were one of the people doing the dirty deed at the beginning of the film.
I was. Me and two other guys. We did bad things to his wife and daughter.
Yeah. Yes. And I have to ask, what casting director would look at you and say, that is a horribly threatening-looking person?
Yeah, thank you. We auditioned and kind of, did some mime versions, three at a time, some, awful-looking guys trying to look their awfulest in New York, and they picked me. I don't know. I'm not sure why.
Really?
Yeah.
Jeff, hi. It's Faith. I have a bit of a confession to make.
Go ahead.
I was standing behind you in security line at JFK a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And you were wearing jeans, and you looked really good. And I took a picture, and I tweeted it, and I said, Jeff Goldblum looks really good from behind. And I want to know how you feel about being objectified like that.
fine and dandy.
Okay, good. All right. See you. Thank you.
We were sitting around, and we were trying to describe or figure out if there is a quintessential Jeff Goldblum character. And it does seem, looking back over your career, particularly back to movies like The Fly and Independence Day, you're sort of like the sexy brainiac, right? I mean,
I've done a variety of things, but I know what you mean. I can see how you'd come up with that. There have been a couple with that sort of strain running through it, maybe. Yeah,
and also the guy that gets eaten off the toilet in Jurassic Park.
That's
right?
Not him.
No,
that's not me.
That's the other guy.
Oh, that's right. Thank God, Jeff.
Yes.
Yeah. I know.
No, he's the guy in Jurassic Park with the remarkable laugh.
You know, I'll tell you a funny story quickly about that guy who played Marty, his name was, the actor. I met him at the airport as we were going for the first shoot to the first part of the shoot in Hawaii.
Yeah.
And we'd read this script. We hadn't met Steven Spielberg together or had a read through. And he said, hey, we're on the same flight together. Hey, you know, nice to meet you. And this is going to be fun. And hey, but I have an idea. I'm going to introduce it to Steven Spielberg that your character, you know, you survive and you kind of heroically get the dinosaur to chase you, and then you've got that broken leg, and he eats me off the toilet. I have an idea that would be better for the story if it was reversed, where you get eaten and die early on, and I'm the one who survives.
And he was serious?
He tested that out with me. I said, huh, well, I don't know. Let's see how it goes.
Well, Jeff Goldblum, we are delighted to talk to you, and we've asked you here to play a game that this time we're calling...
Your Fly is Open.
You played, as everybody knows, the Fly in the 1986 David Cronenberg movie, which is pretty awesome and pretty creepy. But what do you know about the other kind of flies? That is, the kind on your pants. We're going to ask you three questions about zippers. Get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, scorekeeper Emeritus Carl Castle's voice on their voicemail greeting. Bill, who is actor Jeff Goldblum playing for?
Anthony Lysenko of Byron Bay, Australia.
All right. Australia? How did we get somebody from Australia? Yeah. Okay, Jeff, here we go. Your first question. For decades, the newfangled zipper vied with the traditional button for pants supremacy, but many say the moment the zipper became preeminent was when what happened? A, President Taft swore by zippers, saying, "'Tis the only way my pants may contain my stately girth." B, the zipper won Esquire magazine's, quote, "'Battle of the Fly,' or C, a World War II soldier reported his life was saved when a Nazi bullet ricocheted off his zipper.
I would guess, all very interesting, I would guess the second one.
You're going to say Esquire magazine had a battle of the fly and the zipper won. You're right. That's what happened. It was 1927 when Esquire magazine was around then, pronounced the zipper clearly superior to buttons when it comes to pants, saying it helped prevent, quote, the possibility of unintentional and embarrassing disarray, unquote.
Yes.
That's what you said in 1927 when somebody's fly was down. That's an embarrassing disarray, people would say.
Yes.
You did that with real confidence, Jeff. Let's go for the second question. Zippers sometimes, as you can imagine and as we have discussed, can cause trouble and can even cause a scandal, as at the recent Sochi Olympics, when what happened? A, zippers provided by the Russian government to their team proved shoddy, creating a park-wide shortage of safety pins. B, after Putin came out with his zipper undone while congratulating some winners, his personal valet was sent to prison for 20 years. Or C, a victorious speed skater unzipped her speed suit on the rink but forgot she wasn't wearing any underwear.
Huh. That's curious. This safety pin aspect, it makes me doubtful that there was a shortage of safety pins. The Putin thing sounds plausible, but this 20-year business, I don't like. That sounds cooked up. So what was the third? The third one
was... The speed skater who unzipped her suit after winning her race and before she remembered that she was not wearing any underwear underneath.
You know, I like that one.
A lot of us did, Jeff.
You're right, it was C.
Ah.
Russian speed skater Olga Graf won her race, and then, as they often do when they're overheated, she unzipped her suit to cool off, and then she quickly zipped it up when she remembered she wasn't wearing anything underneath.
That's right. Okay.
Last question, and let's see if you can go for perfect. I think you're well on your way. Sometimes zippers are serious business. For example, the Harvard Business Review, that august publication, addressed the subject of flies, pants, zippers, in an article titled what? A, how to tell the boss his fly is down. B, the hand that pulls the zipper runs the boardroom. Or C, what color is your zipper?
Huh. I'm going to eliminate the third one because I don't know where that would go. I don't like that one so much. The first, The first two, the second one sounds like it may have to do with, you know, gender and the serious issues of gender. And so there's much to say about that, I'm sure. But the first one, remind me of the first one again.
The first one was How to Tell the Boss His Fly Is Down.
You know what? That also seems too trivial for what I'm guessing this publication is, because, you know, I mean, how many words can you, you know, hey, your fly is down and da 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 da. I'm circling the runway. I'm about to make a landing. Ladies, it may be. I say, what color is your zipper? What color is your, let's go with what color is your zipper?
The answer, sadly, I would much rather you just continue to guess, but we're running out of time. The answer is How to Tell the Boss His Fly Is Down. And the answer is you tell him quietly and in private. Bill, how did Jeff Goldblum do on our quiz?
Well, we call him a winner if they get 2 out of 3, and Jeff, you did.
Jeff Goldblum is a well-known pianist and sometimes actor, best known for playing the character New Jersey in The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension. Jeff Goldblum, thank you so much for joining us on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you.
Take care.
Come fly with me, let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay.
Back when I was starting out in business, in order to send an important file to other people, you had to go over to their house or office and sing it to them. Really, that's how we did it. These days, it's much easier. You can use Citrix ShareFile. That's the easy-to-use business solution that allows you to exchange files quickly and securely. With ShareFile, you send files of almost any size, you never get a bounce back, and they're encrypted for confidentiality, and they remain under your control. And there's no singing required. For a special 30-day free trial, go to ShareFile.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and enter WAIT. That's W-A-I-T. That way, they know we sent you, and you get some cool stuff. That's ShareFile.com. Enter WAIT.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis, and we're playing this week with Roxanne Roberts, Faith Saley, and Tom Baudet. And here again is your host at the Benedum Center in Pittsburgh, Peter Sagal.
Thank you. Thank you so much, everybody. In just a minute, Bill rhymes so hard your ears will fall off. It's the Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. But right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Roxanne,
yes,
an equal rights group has come out against the FX show American Horror Story, saying the show in its new season is promoting unfair stereotypes about whom?
The show is about carnival people, and
yes,
so there are the two-headed lady, and there are the different carny acts.
There are, but there's one in particular, and I'll point out the two-headed ladies do not have a pressure group.
Clowns!
Yes!
Clowns! Clowns! Yes! I forgot, the clowns!
The new season of American Horror Story features a psychotic evil clown, or as they're commonly known, clown, yeah. Well, the confusingly named Clowns of America International is taking issue with the stereotype, and they should be upset. No man should be judged by the color of his skin, even if that color is white with a giant red smile, and he put it there himself. And while usually clowns deal with their anger by killing and eating the children who linger too long at the birthday party, this time they're going to the media. We do not support in any way any medium that adds to the fear of clowns, said the head of Clowns of America International. He may have heard his cause when he chose to hold his press conference under your bed just after you turned off the lights.
Okay. I'm just going to do like an informal poll here.
Yeah.
Okay, clowns, cute or creepy?
Pretty creepy.
Yeah. Honestly, I haven't had a lot of clown contact.
Yeah. Well,
life,
because of that restraining order for many years
ago.
Tom, A California man whose parrot went missing for 4 years suspects it may have flown really far away when, upon its return, it did what?
It spoke to him in a foreign language.
It did, specifically Spanish. Darren Chick, that's the owner's name, Darren Chick, says that when his parrot Nigel disappeared 4 years ago, it spoke with an English accent, as all things named Nigel do. But then this week, when Nigel finally returned, the bird would only speak Spanish. Avian experts are amazed that a parrot could learn to mimic a completely different language in such a short time, but they give credit to Pimsleur Language Programs, whose unlimited series uses interactive software alongside audio instruction to teach a foreign language.
This is true. Nigel kept asking for Larry.
Nigel kept asking for Larry?
Yes, they're trying to figure out who Larry is.
He also apparently kept saying, what happened?
So he went to Tijuana.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course.
Larry's not here. Faith.
Let's just call her Larry. Larry.
Yes. Yes. See?
Faith, a man was arrested after an altercation with an employee of a DoubleTree Hotel in Bristol, Connecticut, and charged with what?
Aggressively mopping. Oh,
yes!
That's such an awesome story.
30-year-old John Thornton was allegedly upset with the way the employee was mopping the floors and took it upon himself to demonstrate in a, quote, aggressive manner. This makes him both a criminal and the perfect roommate.
It kind of makes you think of there's like a gang rivalry. Like there's the aggressive moppers and the Swiffers.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
When you're a Swiff, you're a Swiff.
Yeah.
Never mind. Roxanne, in an effort to save water, college students in England are being encouraged to do what?
Okay. So I have three options. Option one is pee in the shower.
And that would be right.
Okay.
One, no need. Dare I ask, what were options two and option?
No, we're not going to go there. We don't need to go
all right,
there.
Why,
if you thought living in dorms was gross before, now you will know for sure. Organizers of the Go With The Flow campaign at the University of East Anglia say students could save over 15 million gallons of water if they just start multitasking. This is a great way for people to help the environment without going to boring Greenpeace meetings. Next time somebody asks you to sign a petition or donate money to help save the earth, you can confidently say, students of East Anglia, I do my part in the shower. It's the very least you can do.
I once had a friend tell me that he thought there were just two kinds of people in the world, people who pee in the shower and people who don't.
This is a subject of huge debate.
I thought that was a broad generalization myself.
You think there's a third kind of person?
Well, I think, yeah. Or even more.
Yeah.
Well, I was 3 years old, splashing everywhere, and so began my love affair with water.
Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or click the Contact Us link at our website, which is waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows back at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago and our first ever show in New Jersey. We will be at the New Jersey Performing Arts Center in Newark on December 4th. And be sure to check out this week's How to Do Everything. Ian and Mike now tell you how to tell people they're dumb without making them feel dumb. Hi, you're on Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is Corinne. How the heck are you?
I'm pretty good. How the heck are you, Corinne?
I'm doing so well. I am so nervous.
And where are you calling from, Corinne?
Well, so I've been driving my family and friends crazy with practicing rhymes this week, so I wrote a limerick. Can I read it?
You may. Go ahead.
Okay, great. Okay, so it goes like this. It's, in this land we say yins, so many bridges you might get the spins. We have all the hills and the sports, it's often too cold for jorts. I'm from Pittsburgh, where we have all the winds.
Hey! Pittsburgh? We're in Pittsburgh! Are you at home right now? Can we all come over after the show?
Yes, of course.
Hey guys, we're going to Corinne's house. All right. Well, welcome to the show, Corinne. Nice to have you. Bill Curtis is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly in two of the limericks, you'll be a big winner. Ready to play?
I'm ready.
Here is your first limerick.
We hunters feel both light and dark. Our eyes are not flat. There's a spark. Our three rows of teeth hide a soul underneath. Personality lurks in a...
shark.
Yes! A shark! Contrary to popular belief, sharks are not just mindless killing machines. They're killing machines with feelings and personalities. Like hungry or mad or hungry and mad. This is exciting news for biologists. They consider any shark study where they don't get eaten to be a success. According to this new study published in the journal, Sharks! Some sharks are gregarious, some are shy, some are sociable, and some are sexy, according to this one scientist who really weirds out the other guys. Okay, Corinne, here is your next limerick.
At the Patent Bureau, I struck no chord. They said, Snurf is the name you got, oh Lord. White powder is one. Add the plank, and you're done. Just call your invention a snow...
board.
Yes.
Yes, my goodness.
Snowboard. This week, we learned that snowboarding was originally called snurfing. Snow surfing. Snurfing. It only became known as snowboarding after the founder of the Burton Company couldn't get the rights to the name Snurfboards. Snowboarding isn't the only winter sport originally called something else. Skiing was once known as white people going down hills on sticks. Here is your last limerick.
It can tell when I'm coming unglued, or when I just sit here and brood. This new software sees how I'm striking the keys, and so it determines my...
mood.
Yes! Whoa! You got that. You were ready for that. An engineering team has designed a program that's able to determine your mood while typing on your keyboard, you know, when you're in the internet. This is easy because the only two moods it has to choose from when you go on the internet are bored or horny. The program was able to predict with 70% accuracy whether test subjects were, for instance, sad. Probably how they figure out is someone types IM space SAD. Bill, how did Corinne do in our quiz?
Well, Corinne is from Pittsburgh, so she's perfect.
Yes.
Well done, Corinne.
Thank you.
Did Pittsburgh proud. Thanks for playing. Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer is now worth 2 points. Bill, can you give us the scores?
Tom and Roxanne each have 3. Faith has 2.
Okay, so that means Faith, unusually, you're in third place. That means you go first. The clock will start when I begin your first question, fill in the blank. On Thursday, the Chinese-controlled government agreed to meet with protesters in blank.
Hong Kong.
Right. A panel of bishops at the Vatican announced the church might be softening its opposition to blank.
Homosexuality.
Yeah, and gay marriage. During a Facebook Q&A, Bono apologized to U2 fans for blanking.
For forcing their new music to be a download. It was automatic.
That's
iPhones.
Right.
Yeah, on
that's
iPhones.
Right.
Yeah.
Following in the footsteps of Target and Home Depot, Kmart became the latest company to be compromised by blank.
Credit card breach.
Yeah, hackers. A man in Sweden was arrested for driving under the influence after he blanked during a traffic stop.
No idea.
After he ate a pile of money that was sitting on his passenger seat. At an event on Thursday, Apple unveiled the newest version of the blank.
iPad.
Right. For the first time in 29 years, the Kansas City Royals won a spot at the blank.
World Series.
Right. After months of heated debate on whether or not to ban smoking in public parks, the city council of Turlock, California, learned blank.
Learned that their parks are not flammable, are inflammable.
No, they learned that smoking has already been banned in their parks for over a decade. The town of Turlock, California, proposed banning smoking. They pitted health advocates and the city council against those who believe all citizens have the right to smell like old motels. No hey. Offense, Tom.
Hey.
Okay. They debated for months, and this week they realized the ban has been in place for 10 years and no one knew. Cops are now busily creating a time machine so they can enforce the law they forgot about, while the city council takes up the issue of whether to give women the right to vote. Bill, how did Faith do in our quiz?
She got 6 right for 12 more points. She now has 14 and the lead.
Well done, Faith. All right, we have flipped a coin. Roxanne has elected to go last, so that means, Tom, you're up next. Fill in the blank. This week, analysts reported that the annual U.S. military spending would increase by $40 billion due to blank.
ISIS crisis.
Yes, the ISIS crisis. On Monday, Vladimir Putin ordered the return of 18,000 troops to the border with blank.
Ukraine.
Right. After its earnings report Wednesday, the video streaming service blank lost a quarter of its stock market value.
Netflix.
Right. A Chicago man running from the police on Sunday was able to briefly escape by blanking.
He ran faster.
How clever. He did do that, but what he did was he jumped into the Chicago Marathon and ran with the competitors.
You're almost there.
Yes.
You're almost there.
The right. Nielsen Company blamed a software bug for 7 months' worth of inflated blank reporting.
Television viewing.
Yeah, TV rating. Yeah. Neil Patrick Harris has been announced as the host of the 87th annual Blanks.
The Oscars.
Right. A Florida man covered in roof tar while attempting to break into a store from above told police he wasn't trying to break in, he was just blanking.
He was repairing the roof.
No, he said he was visiting his family up on the roof. Florida police responded to a call of a suspicious man trying to break into a convenience store through the air conditioning duct. But when they confronted the man, who was standing there covered in roof tar, he explained to them that he was just visiting his family, who lived on the roof.
But then they found out that the family living on the roof was not his family.
That's true. Bill, how did Tom do on our quiz?
Tom got 5 right for 10 more points. He now has 13, but Faith has the lead, 14.
All right. So, Bill, I know Roxanne. I've known her for years. She likes to win. How many does she need to do that?
6 to win.
All right, here we go, Roxanne. This is for the game. Leaders from the U.S. and EU say they're close to reaching a deal with Iran over its blank program.
Their nuclear program.
Yes, exactly. After a 2-month absence, North Korean leader blank made his first public appearance this week.
Kim Jong-un on a cane.
There you go. On Thursday, the FBI spoke out against technology companies improving their blank software.
Privacy encryption?
Right. A mobile billboard in Russia encouraging women to get mammograms blanked in a single day.
It flashed?
No, it caused 500 traffic accidents.
Oh!
The NFL announced that this year's Super Bowl halftime show would be performed by blank.
Katy Perry.
I'm so excited. To help those caught in natural disasters, on Wednesday, the social networking site blank unveiled a service called Safety Check.
Facebook.
Right. Some customers who purchase Hermes' new $20,000 Birkin bags are complaining that the bags blank.
Smell like burnt marijuana.
Exactly right! Birkin bags are among the most sought-after accessories in the world. Some people wait years just to be able to buy one for tens of thousands of dollars. So it's understandable that people started complaining when they noticed that their bag smelled like it came packed with its own tiny Grateful Dead concert. Hermes has apologized. It may be too late for them to catch up, though, with a competing product, a $13 handbag from Walmart stuffed with $20,000 worth of weed. If you think about it, the better buy. Bill, did Roxanne do well enough to win?
She did get 6 right for 12 more points. So with 15, she is this week's champion.
Roxanne. Well done. In just a minute, we'll ask our panelists, after Charlie Crist's fan hit the fan, what will be the next big controversy at a political debate. But first, let me tell you all that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and eSurance, insurance for the modern world, offering a mobile app that lets users report and monitor car insurance claims at eSurance.com. Angie's List, where consumers can browse, buy, and schedule local services online. More at angieslist.com. And Subaru, featuring the all-new Subaru Outback. Love, it's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. Learn more at Subaru.com. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord. Philip Godica writes our limericks. Our intern is Kel CD Sound System Hardison. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Special thanks to the staff and crew at the Benedum Center in Pittsburgh. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Waltrover and Miles Dornbos. Technical direction is from Lorna White. Lorna, I pause to say, is celebrating 30 years of working at NPR. This means, yes, 30 years, three decades. Congratulations, Lorna. Our CFO is Ann Nien, who ironically has been alive for 30 years. Our production coordinator is Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog. And the executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Run from the Sandwich Danforth. Now, panel, what will be the next big debate controversy after the fan? Faith Saley.
The wind machines on Senator Cory Booker's backup dancers.
Roxanne Roberts.
Hillary Clinton will be debating holding her adorable new granddaughter, and her opponents are free to bring a cute little relative if they have one.
And Tom Baudet.
Governor Rick Perry of Texas will be unable to attend the Republican primary debates due to a CDC travel ban from Ebola-infected regions of the world.
And if any of those things happen, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Bill Curtis. Thanks also to Faith Saley, Tom Baudet, Roxanne Roberts. Thanks to Tammy Turwelp and everyone at 90.5 WESA in Pittsburgh. Thanks to our fabulous audience here at the Benedum Center. You rock. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week in Chicago. This is NPR.